Oh, hi, podcast listeners. There's many ways you can listen to the Real Nerds Podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher Radio. You want to send us a Twitter message? You can do that. It's so easy, at Real Nerds. Like us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. You can visit our website, realnerdspodcast.com, where there'll be a lot of articles for you to not only read, but to listen to our previous shows. Do you like your stories told through pictures? Then you can also follow us at Real Nerds on Instagram. You can also call us, 720-6NERDS5. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Camera, action!
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd
doesn't
can...
Doesn't talk film! I'm sorry.
Take it outside.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd will give it all they got. Lights, camera, action!
Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome to Real Nerds Podcast. I am Ryan, and I am joined by my good old friend, Brad. Brad, how are you today?
I'm still here, and I'm super excited because I found something I've been looking for a very long time, and it's movie-related.
What did you find?
Yesterday, early in the morning, I went to Twist and Shout. I found an unopened, factory-sealed Super Mario Brothers movie soundtrack CD.
Wow.
Yeah, which is really hard to find.
And we're talking about the Bob Hoskins one, right?
Yep, 1993. It's got music from Roxette, Extreme, Queen, Marky Mark, George Clinton.
I remember the Marky Mark, what Queen song's in it?
Yeah, what Queen song is in it? A Tie Your Mother Down.
I don't remember that at all, but...
Must be something playing in the background.
In the background or something.
Yeah. So yeah, Walk the Dinosaur with the Goombas featuring George Clinton. Although
was it an expensive CD?
No, it was like $8.
Oh,
yeah. So, but here's the thing: it's sealed. It has never been opened. it's got that like features the Smash Single sticker on it, but there's like one of those cuts in the spine that like retailers when they like expense out stock or whatever. That's like slashed to the side, so I'm like, it's kind of technically not factory sealed.
Yeah.
So should I open it or leave it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
It's also got one of those like chrome hologram stickers that keeps the like case closed. I don't know if you remember those.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, like I want to, copy the files to my computer. Like, this is a hard thing to find. Like, this is something
super hard.
You know, on eBay for like, I don't know, $30-something, $50. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, I was at Twist and Shout and I got there's this Rod Stewart and Faces CD that was out of print forever. I mean, no joke. I think it's been out of print since the first time CDs were out. So, like, 1990-ish. And it was always so hard to find. It's called Rod Stewart Faces Coast to Coast Live Overture. And it was on video cassette and music cassette and vinyl. You can find them pretty easily. But the CD was super hard to find. And the last time I was there, you know, I always check. And they had it, and it was still like $30. But, I mean... You know, when you see that stuff, you got to get it because you never know when somebody else is going to come along and be like, oh, fuck, the Mario soundtrack.
Dude, yeah, so many times I've been to Twist and Shout and been like, oh, you know, the 4K Escape from New York Shout Factory with the slipcover, you know, I'll pick that up later.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's out of print. Like, you can't get the slipcover with it anymore. And yeah, there's like other things. I'm like, oh, I've been looking for this for a while, but I don't, you know, probably not a good time to buy it, but who else is going to want this? And then sure enough, next time I go back, like, gone.
Yeah. And you always say to yourself, who the fuck bought that? Who's weird like me that wants this? And then you realize that we're all weird.
Yeah. Who's looking for this at the same time I am?
Yeah.
Weird.
It is. It's, you know, in a way, sometimes I'm cool with it because I said, you know what? Someone appreciated that, and I like that they appreciated it. So good on them.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Nice. No, that's awesome.
How about you? What's going on with you?
I just work all the time. I have nothing cool. I just work. And then when I don't work, I have to take care of my kid. And
didn't you take your kid to wrestling?
I did. I did take him for his birthday, which was really fun. You know, it's such a performance art, but there is an art, and I've said this before, that when someone is really good to control, you know, 20,000 people to chant stuff and do dances, and I didn't really know anybody. I knew of them because I still follow the WWE on Facebook and stuff. But to say that I knew their moves or storylines or anything, that'd be a stretch. But, you know, there's this guy named Dominic Mysterio, and he understands how to be a heel, which is the bad guy term for wrestlers, so well. He's, you know, like a coward, and he knows how to play up the crowd and how he usually cheats to win. And it's just kind of fun to see that he understands his role. And he does it so well that everybody boos him and, you know, jeers at him. And I was like, man, this kid, and he has to be like, I don't know, 25, 26. He understands how to play to a crowd, even though they, quote unquote, don't like him. There's an art to that. You know what I mean? There's an art to being able to perform and people not like you. And I was kind of in awe of how he was able to play the crowd. And I was like, damn, this kid knows what's up. I haven't seen someone play a crowd this well since The Rock. But it was fun, you know, the athleticism and all that jazz. And it was my kid's 10th birthday, so that's the big deal.
They grow up so fast.
They sure do. Yeah, that's all I've been doing. If it's not work, then it's trying to get my kid to school and, you know, have adventures with them. And
somewhere in there, we see movies.
And so we do. And I got a email from the principal of his school. And he says, you know, I've seen that Kellen's been late a couple times. Make sure that when he gets into the school, he goes straight to class. And I want to say, oh, that's my fault. It's definitely not my kid's fault. Because the tardy bell rings at 7:50. And last week, I got him to school twice, back-to-back days, right at 7:50. So by the time he gets to his classroom, because the fifth grade is all the way in the back. So by the time he gets to his classroom, he's like, you know, 2-3 minutes late. And that's totally my fault.
Poor kid. He's just like getting reamed by his teacher. He's like,
the principal calls him into his office. Hey, quit being late.
It's my dad's fault. Don't blame your dad for your.
Yeah. Your father is a respected officer. And you're going to blame him for you being late?
A police officer would never make the mistake of being late.
Yeah. Sorry, son. So yeah, I read that email and I go, oh man, I just got called out by the principal. So
come on, son, take you to get some ice cream.
Yeah. Sorry there, champ. Slugger. But you can't be late to a movie at the Alamo, which is where we saw our movie of the week, Dee Dee. Stay tuned, where we'll recommend the film or not, play the trailer, and then, dude, it's so hard to spoil comedies, but we'll spoil the movie. And we'll also talk about the movies we watch throughout the week. Because that's what we do. That's
hell
how we
yeah.
roll.
No so, other yeah. podcast on the internet can do that for you.
Yeah, no, where else are we going to hear a story about finding the Mario Brothers soundtrack, a Rod Stewart album, and me making my kid late to school and getting called out by the principal? Nowhere.
Yeah.
Except Real Nerds Podcast.
No other podcast can give you that kind of entertainment.
Yeah. So Brad, this week we saw Dee Dee. Do you recommend the film?
Yeah, I think it's a nice film. Yeah, again, it's like a comedy, so it's not like a ton of like surprise, like, oh, I didn't see that coming. It's just kind of like a slice of life thing. You're kind of just along for the ride, and it's just a nice, sweet coming of age tale.
I agree. It's, you know, even though it's a comedy, there's some drama built into it. And but it's really well made, and I think the kid in it's really good. Here's a trailer for Dee Dee.
What was your name again?
Chris. All my friends just call me a Wang Wang.
What should I call you? You're never gonna survive high school.
You're like a lizard with your scaly ass eczema skin.
It's a face!
Ah, lizard bitch!
Just call me a bitch!
Bitch.
Nobody likes you!
Wanna drag me down,
but
what time you
can
kill me? But I'll resurrect.
Next lap.
保持 4.0 的 GPA.
Oh, Chris, play video.
Yo, Wang Wang, no name and trip. You got strong ass teeth. You're handsome.
That's why Maddie likes you, baby.
Lean into the person until your lips touch.
Have you ever played the nervous game before? Are you nervous?
Yes.
What?
I am nervous. I'm sorry.
Didi, are you sad?
Fine.
I'm thinking you. Come on.
知道你这样做，别人会怎么看我？
I'm your son. I'm sorry, I'm not a bragging right to your friends.
If you guys need a filmer, I film.
So, who are those new people you've been hanging out with?
Friends.
Promise me you won't do anything stupid.
Please don't tell Mom. Are you ashamed of me?
Alright, I'm giving you.
No, you're beautiful.
I'm half of you.
No, I love you.
Didi,
you're
my dream.
But sometimes it's a little hard.
So we got to flash all the way back to 2008, where this movie takes place. I mean, I did see this movie this week, so I don't know why I'm having trouble remembering it. So you go back to 2008 with a boy named Chris. He lives in California, and it's a typical coming of age tell in some regards, where his family kind of doesn't get him. He really likes to make movies, and this is kind of the time when YouTube was kind of taking off, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And he decides he wants to make skate videos, and really it starts with him just hanging out with his friend, and yeah, it's like he's making videos. His family doesn't approve of him.
His sister's going off to college soon, so he'll be the only kid in the house.
Yeah, and...
And his friends are kind of like in that middle ground of like, you know, as everyone gets older and finds new interests, like his friend group is kind of leaving him, and he's kind of desperate to still have friends in some capacity.
Yeah, and it's kind of cool because I love films that represent maybe an underserved community. And I obviously don't know what it's like to grow up as an Asian kid and the pressure that he's under. And I kind of liked a look into another family. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Also, a story we don't get to see very often.
Also one where I guess like their dad works overseas doing some thing, like some big national company, and so it's just his mom and his grandma really there as the adults, mm-hmm. to take care of him. And yeah, obviously the grandma is just like very traditional values, and his mom is like, it's so sad, like she's trying to be an artist, like mm-hmm. she really wants to be an artist, and you know, her kids just like ignore her art, and
yeah
and like she, you know, is doing her best as like pretty much a single parent and everything. But yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, his mom, she's great in it. Joan Chen is amazing in this movie. Yeah, it's just, it's a cool look into, you know, I like I said, an underserved community, I think, in films, because, you know, as we've seen so many films, you know, the Asian community is usually locked into action movies or kung fu movies. So it's always cool to see a coming of age story from a different perspective.
Yeah.
And done really well. I mean, really well done. And it's funny.
Yeah. Like there's been a lot of good ones lately, like Drive My Car and Minari.
Yeah. Oh, I freaking adore Minari.
Yeah. Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah.
It's more of a genre thing, but yeah, it's just good to see that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But, you know, even with, you know, Everything Everywhere All at Once kind of gives it, you know, yeah, it's a genre film, but it's also about how difficult and how mean the mom is to her daughter. Yeah. And this, you kind of get the reverse of, you mean, you touch on it, the mom struggling and the kids kind of adding to her insecurities, and it's a really touching film. I know I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's also, yeah, it has like great cringy moments, you know, that you know, he's just seeing kids being awkward and like making the wrong decisions sometimes. And there's also some like great surreal things. Like I wish that there's more stuff like the talking fish throughout the movie. And then all the
shout out to an old Dick Van Dyke episode.
Yeah. And then all the fun like AOL Instant Messenger chat stuff of like typing something out and then backtracking it.
You know, that reminded me of that time so much, is it, you know, AIM, and I remember, you know, you had to have a cool handle for your AIM, and
yeah, it's like
is American Online even still a thing anymore?
I don't think so. Also the skate video stuff, just, you know, we were making videos on mini DV at the same time too.
Yeah.
So that just brought back a lot of it, like, yeah, when he blows that shot and everything, like those guys were harsh about that, but they were douchebags too anyway. So
In case you're wondering, AOL is now part of Yahoo. So
really, are they part of Warner Brothers? Because it used to be AOL Time Warner.
Nope, they're owned, they're brand marketed by Yahoo, and they're just AOL.com. And they've been around for 41 years.
Actually, I guess probably like the sign-on's different, but like, I'm sure the emails still work, because like Hollywood Babylon has the HBO at AOL email, so.
I mean, according to Wikipedia, they still have 5,600 employees.
Huh. I wonder what they do. Just manage those emails, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, let me see. No, I mean, I'm just looking.
It's just like, dude,
they purchased Netscape in 1998 for $4.2 billion. Holy shnikes.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That was early days. Netscape was like one of the big browsers.
Oh, yeah. Remember, you used to get the CDs and all the magazines you bought for AOL?
I still have some of those floppy disks and the CDs. Yeah.
So I have the CDs because I have old Game Pros and Wizards.
Yeah.
And I have them in, you know, Mylar bags. So yes, I still own some of those.
It's so crazy, like, how accessible the internet is now compared to like back then. You have to like dial in and then like sit through that screechy tone, and then like your images would just like slowly complete as you like went to just like a GeoCities site.
Yep.
We're so spoiled now.
I know. I was saying that today when I was at work, and one of our report management systems took, I don't know, maybe 30 seconds to load. And as you know, oh, come on.
I know. I'm just like screaming at my phone, like, why can't you connect? And then like, 20 years ago, or yeah, like 20 years ago, it was like, come on, like video game photograph thing, like, you're almost there, keep downloading.
You got it, hang in there, little buddy.
I
totally agree. But yeah, you could see DD. This movie reminded me of that time of the infancy of like really quality internet, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you should see it. I think you can stream it or digitally get it now. Cause I'm getting targeted ads on my Facebook about it. But yeah, check it out. Brad, we watch films throughout the week in a segment I call What We've Been Watching.
So, yeah, this is the stuff we've been watching.
Brad, what'd you watch this week?
Yeah, okay, so I think The Crow. I saw The Crow.
Oh, yeah.
I was curious
about that because I follow you on Letterboxd, and I saw that you were not a fan of The Crow.
It was pretty boring to me. The movie is like half like these two people that are like traumatic and like, I guess, in rehab, maybe fall in love, and then they like hang out and smoke and be in love like half a movie. And meanwhile, yeah, there's like this secret organization that wants to kill them.
Sorry, yeah, I don't think you're sorry to interrupt you, but I think you're on the right point because I read a review of it and it said it took so long to get going.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And that the leads don't have very good chemistry. And the reviewer said it just felt like a way longer movie than it actually was.
Yeah. And like when it gets to the action, like it's pretty gnarly and badass, but like it takes so long to get there. There aren't that many scenes of that. And then a lot of the time I'm just like, who's that guy? Like, what's his, like, what's the motivation for what they're doing? Like, what's the secret organization? Like, is that guy the devil? Like he's whispering into people and making them do stuff. And yeah. And there's like this purgatory, where the guy, Eric Draven goes and like talks to this other dude, and goes in and out of that. And yeah, I was just like, I don't understand the rules of this place and what's going on and why these people want to kill these Gen Zers. I don't know. Yeah, I get that the crow symbolizes this place between heaven and hell, and you can get revenge and be invincible. But other than that, I don't care. I do not give a shit about any of this.
Well, so did not everybody else in the world because it tanked really bad.
Yeah, so I'm sitting there going, like, what's the new take on this? Because I fell asleep watching the original like a while ago and never revisited it. But yeah, I'm not really sure like what the appeal of this is.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people are pissed about it. My friend Chaz is a really big fan of The Crow, and he was pissed that they were remaking it. So
yeah, which
they did not start like, off on the best footing. So
I mean, they've already made like three other sequels that no one really cared about.
Yeah,
in the same vein as the one they love.
Yeah,
so I was like, oh, you know, I'll give this one a shot. Look, it's a little more reimagined. Like, it doesn't look like Bruce Lee's or Brandon Lee's The Crow. So I was like, I could, but yeah, I was just sitting there going like, when is something cool going to happen?
Yeah. That's also not a good thing.
Yeah. Like, I don't like, there's so much buildup of these two people falling in love. And I get it's to like make you like when she gets killed to make you give a shit, but I'm like, I two scenes would have been fine. Like, I get it. Like, I don't need like,
we're good.
Like an hour's worth of stuff. Like, when's he going to become the crow? Takes like an hour and a half to get there. And then also like the Alamo is super like freezer cold. So that didn't help.
Mm.
I was like, am I going to die?
Is this what hell is?
Is this cold on purpose to like immerse me in this movie? Cause this sucks. So yeah, The Crow. And then, I also watched Blink twice, which fun fact I found out was originally titled Pussy Island.
No.
But obviously, I guess that was tough to market.
Yeah.
wonder
why.
Yeah. And it was all right. Again, another one that takes a long time to get to like what the movie is. There's a lot of just partying on an island. And then occasionally like little odd things happen and people disappear. But yeah, again, it takes like an hour and a half to like get to like why this movie's important at all. Because it kind of had the vibe of like, hey, we're all having fun as a filmmaking team on this island shooting this film. And so we have a ton of footage of us just hanging out. And I kind of wish they just kind of got to the point of the thing a little faster.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it really is like the lady version of like Get Out, I guess, in some ways. So I was like, oh, okay. That's all right. And then there's parts where when it finally gets to the climax, like the action is like pretty disjointed. You're like, people are shooting. You're like, where's that coming from? Like, who's what's where? And like the camera's not really following everything very well.
Oh, man, those are my least favorite kind of action movies.
Yeah. So yeah, it's all right.
Gotcha.
Like it's a good, important, like, I guess, message, I guess, behind it, but I don't know if it's very executed in a very entertaining way. So yeah. What'd you watch?
A couple things. I'm doing this thing where I have these Blu-rays that I own that I haven't watched. And so the first one this week was RoboCop 3. I think I'm a little, I don't know. Like, there's the part of it's cool because it's still RoboCop.
Yeah.
But then without Peter Weller, like, there is some gravitas that is lost in the performance. And the movie just doesn't really work. And which is really cool, though, is I have the Scream Factory version. I don't know if you have this version of it, Brad.
Oh, yeah.
But I love the interview with Fred Decker in it, where he's like, yeah, it's my fault this movie sucks.
Oh, I guess I haven't watched the special features. Yeah, yeah. It's definitely like a huge dip in quality, like just production-wise, too.
Yeah, and he says he made a mistake making it PG-13. And yeah. The commentary on it is brilliant, because he's like, yeah, this movie sucks because I made bad choices. I'm like, all right, man. Hey, good for you, Fred Decker. He's like, just refreshing. Owning it.
Yeah,
but I don't know. There's some charm to it because it's still RoboCop. But you're right, the step down in quality, because RoboCop is really cool. In fact, for my birthday, Laura got me this mug, and I don't know why, but she got it for me. And
because you're the future of law enforcement.
Yes. No. It says, "Do you remember when RoboCop shot that dude in the dick?"
Oh yeah.
So I put it on my desk at work, and I thought it was funny. So, but yeah.
Have you seen our RoboCop remake?
Huh.
There's like, so I guess like, I don't know, 2012 or something, a bunch of industry people, and like comedians and stuff. They each like, they cut up the original RoboCop into different, like, I guess like 5 minutes pieces. And then everyone was assigned to do a remake of each of those pieces. And so there's like, and then they reassembled it into like this one thing called our RoboCop remake. And then so, you know, there'll be one scene that's like silly. And then there's like an animation for the next 5 minutes. And then there's like some other thing for the next 5 minutes. But one of the sections is like the part where the guy gets shot in the dick. Mm-hmm. They like, they take it to like, they dial it up to like a million percent. So he just starts shooting like a ton of people's dicks off, and it's like totally uncensored, and it's great. It's amazing.
That's
just
awesome.
Look up our RoboCop remake, and I forget what scene it is. I think it's like 27 or something. But yeah, it's just like over and over again, just like mangled penises getting like shot apart.
I'm on board with that.
Yeah.
RoboCop 3 is, I'm glad that I have it to complete my RoboCop collection, I guess.
Yeah.
I watch Adam Sandler's new stand-up called Love You, and it's brilliant. It's on Netflix. Everybody should watch it. It has this low-budget feel to it. And there's a funny bit at the beginning where he's signing autographs for people outside the club, and it's this dude with his kid, and it's like pictures of him in his own house. And he's like, where'd you get these? And the guy says, oh, it's from your new movie. It's pretty funny. So yeah, it's just a stand-up comedy, but it's great. For Kino Lorber's sale a long time ago, I got Billy Kidd versus Dracula. And yeah, this movie is like really bad, but it has this like charm to it where it follows no like vampiric rules. The Dracula in it is not like an attractive dude. He can be out in the sun. And it's, there's, I don't know what the actual rules of Billy the Kid versus Dracula is, but there's some kind of campy charm to Dracula being in a Western with Billy the Kid, where he's, you know, it's a Western that has Dracula in it, is basically what it is. And it's so low budget. And they also make Billy Kid out to be this like, American hero. And I go, that's not what Billy the Kid was like. But hey, you know what? it's a marketable name. He versus Dracula in it, and there's some low budget charm to it, I guess, is all I can say. And I mean, there's also some unintentional, you know, racism with the Native Americans, where they're constantly called savages throughout it. So, you know, you have that going for it. Which, when you watch movies like that and they use language like that, it takes you immediately out of the movie. You know, you're like, ugh, this is not well put. This is not very sensitive. And it's always like white people in just wearing, you know, leather and moccasins, and it's just. Just poor taste. But it's fun. It's campy. I'm glad I got it when it was $5.99. And the last thing I watched, just randomly again on my Blu-ray stuff, up here, the leaves are starting to change. It's starting to get a little cooler, so it's the fall. So it's the start of spooky season, and I watched James Cameron's first film, Piranha 2, The Spawning. which, dude, it opens with these people scuba diving, and then they just take off all their clothes and start fucking underwater, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? And then the piranhas eat them, so it's pretty cool. It's really cheesy. Lance Henriksen's in it, though. Like a young Lance Henriksen. I think this is just before Aliens, or a couple years before. It's 78 79. But he's in it as this cop, and his wife, who has a new boyfriend because they're separated, is this dive lady, and one of her dudes gets eaten by the piranha, but these piranha mutate and they fly out of the water and they have wings and they eat people, and it's all bloody and gory. It's really low budget, but there's some fun to it. The acting in it kind of sucks donkey dick. But, you know, it looks good. And you can see that James Cameron's going to become a really talented filmmaker, because he does underwater scenes, and the camera's always in the right spot, and it moves, and it moves by quickly. I think it's only like 80 minutes, and it's another like Shout Factory, Scream Factory, that they did a good job on remastering it, and there's a couple bonus features on it. It's a silly film, but, you know, it's a piranha movie. What else do you want? Yeah, that's what I watched this week.
Corinne sent in a Showtime.
Yeah, I know. I was about to get to that. I was like, I didn't forget this time, but let's go ahead and play that for our listeners.
Hey, nerds. Corinne here for another installment of Showtime, where I typically talk about something cool I've been watching lately. But this week, I'm doing something a little different. We're going to be talking about the surprise announcement of Ted Lasso season 4. I can't. I have so many thoughts. We might have to spread this out over two different episodes, because I have a lot to talk about. First and foremost is that I am cautiously optimistic about season 4, because as you might remember, I did not have a very good relationship with season 3, especially with the season 3 finale and just how everything ended. As I was watching season 3, I was like, I could see the problems. The episodes were too long. We were spending too much time with certain characters, not enough time with others. We were just focused on a lot of plot lines that went nowhere, characters that nobody liked. But I was like, hey, it's okay as long as they stick the landing. And then they didn't. And supposedly the show was over at that point. You know, they were like, this is it. We're not going to do a fourth season. And the way that it ended was just so lackluster. So, yeah, I when it came out a couple days ago on Twitter that they were like, hey, they might be doing a fourth season of Ted Lasso, I was like, it's just a rumor. I'm not getting invested in it. And then it got picked up enough that I was like, okay, it's basically confirmed at this point. Yeah, I was actually really excited when they said they were going to be doing a fourth season, and talking about it with more Ted Lasso fans, it's like, I do remember how many problems season 3 had, and it's like season 4 could be just as bad, if not worse. But I'm like, yeah, but season 3 was so bad, it could also easily be better. So it's like, can, you know, season 3 was so bad, the bar can't really get that much lower. So It might still be equally bad. Who knows? But as far as what I think is going to happen, I basically see it going one of three ways. Number one, it's going to be what I call a soft reboot, where basically Ted is not really in the picture. Some of the other characters are maybe not in the picture, or maybe they might like cameo or something. But, you know, we get a lot of new characters. The setting might be the same, but the formula might be a little different. There might be different conflicts. Mild spoilers, I guess, for season three finale, but they set up the possibility that Richmond might expand to a women's team. So if that happens, and we'll talk about more here in a second. But yeah, if that happens, I could see them basically making Ted Lasso season four basically be this soft spinoff where they incorporate the women's team into the men's team of the like the structure of the show. So now we're focused on both teams. Ted is maybe like a mentor figure who's kind of off doing his own thing, and they don't really, you know, maybe they call him occasionally and maybe he shows up at the very end of the season or something, but it's mostly going to be focused on a new set of characters, even if it's set in the same location and has some overlap. But again, I could totally see, because I think Apple realizes that Ted Lasso is one of the most recognizable shows that they have. It's probably the most watched. It's the most, it has merch. I've never seen any other Apple show that has merch for it. It's been nominated for Emmys, so it definitely has like a lot of brand recognition as, you know, as a show. So I could definitely see like the writers came to Apple and said, hey, we want to do a Ted Lasso spinoff. And they're like, no way. We want a full blown Ted Lasso season four because we need this show. We need the viewership. It has a built in audience. And like, yeah, I'm sure that if they'd said we want to do a spinoff, that a lot of viewers would have shown up for it. But I think the fact that Ted Lasso season four got announced is like way more exciting to people than, hey, they're going to do a Ted Lasso spinoff, because people would be like, eh, whatever. You know, some people might be excited, but some people might be like, you know what, Ted Lasso really sucked and I hated how it ended, and so I don't care if it comes back, or I don't care if it gets a spinoff. But again, if Ted Lasso season four, I think, captures everybody who both liked the way season three ended and didn't like the way season three ended, because now everybody wants to see how it's going to continue. So anyway, option number one, soft spinoff, where again, they're bringing in a lot of new characters, have a new formula, but the name is still the same, right? So option number two, and this is going to be getting into some spoilers for the Ted Lasso season three finale. So if you don't want any spoilers, this might be your time to hop off. I'll try not to say anything really big, but anyway. So number two is that there is not going to be a major time jump between the end of season three and the beginning of season four. I really don't think this is likely. I think that they're going to end up doing option three, which I'll talk about in a second. But basically this would require them to kind of retcon or somehow explain away the kind of epilogue sequences that they had at the very end of season three. They might have built themselves in a little bit of wiggle room, because the way it was framed in the finale was almost kind of like, it might have been a dream that Ted was having, because all of the kind of epilogue sequences of like Rebecca meeting Boat Guy and Roy succeeding Ted as head coach of Richmond, and you know, all this other stuff, Beard and Jane getting married, you know, it all happened within the frame of time that Ted was on the plane. So they might explain it away as like, oh, it was a dream Ted had or something. But as much as I would like that, because I hated those epilogue sequences, or at least I hated most of them, not all of them, but I don't think they're going to do that. I think we're going to get option three, which is that there is going to be a major time jump between the end of season three and the beginning of season four. And it might kind of tie into the thing about the women's team, that maybe what might happen is that the epilogue sequences really did happen, but they didn't seem to cover a huge chunk of time, you know, maybe like 6 months or a year, because I think like Phoebe doesn't look that much older in the barbecue sequences. I think Jane might have been pregnant in the wedding. I don't know, but I mean, it might not cover more than like 6 months to a year within that epilogue time frame. So if we get like a 2 or 3 year time jump, we could see like, you know, maybe Rebecca did get with Boat Guy, but they broke up, or maybe Beard and Jane did get married, but then they get divorced, or whatever. And maybe Roy did succeed Ted as head coach of Richmond, but now he, you know, maybe he wants to move on to another team or whatever happens. And it would give them enough time to build the infrastructure and the foundation for the women's team. And then maybe that explains why Rebecca is all of a sudden calling Ted up again and saying, like, hey, we have a women's team we want to start and we need a coach. You seem like the logical choice. And then maybe, you know, enough time has passed that Ted's in a different place in his life. You know, his son is older, rebellious teenager, whatever. And so he's like, okay, I feel like I'm at a place where I can leave my family and, you know, go take a job overseas again. So, you know, maybe Ted does go and, you know, he goes back to Richmond and he coaches the women's team this time. So then we would still get Ted Lasso in Richmond coaching soccer, football, whatever you want to call it. But we might have, like, again, some of the old characters, but then it would kind of be a soft reboot, but at least, like, Ted would still be there. Whereas with the soft reboot option I outlined as number one, Ted would not really be involved. He wouldn't really be, like, a main character. But in option three, he is. So I honestly don't know. I see option one and three being about equal. I don't think option two is really going to happen. I think they're going to have to do a time jump, because otherwise it's like, why have Ted go back to Kansas if he's just immediately going to go back to Richmond? You know, I do think that the women's team thing is going to happen. And I think that that's going to be the excuse to bring Ted back over, or to do like a soft reboot, like I said. So yeah, again, cautiously optimistic. I could see this going very badly, but I could also see this being way better than what we got. And honestly, I do think we're going to get more than four seasons. Like, if we get a fourth season, I'm positive we're going to get a fifth season, because no way they revive the show. No way they just say, like, okay, we're going to do three seasons and that's it. And then, like, 2 years later, they're like, no, we want to do a fourth season, and then that's it. I bet, you know, Apple, especially because they don't really have a lot of other big flagship shows, they're going to try to keep Ted Lasso going as long as they can, or as long as they feasibly, reasonably can. So that's where I'm at. I've rambled about it long enough, but this probably should have been a post on the Real Nerds website, but I'm in the middle of a whole bunch of other personal writing projects right now, and I'm like, ugh, don't need one more thing to write about, okay? On top of all of my other, like, professional, like, stuff I write for work. So anyway, you just get this on the Real Nerds podcast. But yes, join me next time when I will talk more about Ted Lasso, my wish list for season four, probably other bitching about why Apple is bringing it back now versus why, you know, why did they wait 2 years to do this? I really think it boils down to, it was like I was bitching about 2 weeks ago with the whole thing with The Acolyte. Apple does not have a lot of viewership. They don't have a lot of flagship shows. Ted Lasso is the most mainstream one that they have, and it ended. So of course they want to bring it back, because they want the viewership. It has a built-in audience. They want to get people resubscribing to Apple, and they want them to, you know, which will subsequently get people interested in all their other shows. So it's like free advertising for them, basically. You know, all they have to do is, like, Ted Lasso season four confirmed, and then, like, boom, you know, 100,000 extra people sign up for Apple Plus because they want to rewatch Ted Lasso now that season four has basically been confirmed. Yep. Free advertising. So now they don't have to market whatever prestige show that nobody's watching. All right, guys, I know we're going to do Film Splosion next week, so check in with me in like 2 or 3 weeks time, where I'll probably talk more about Ted Lasso and my wish list for season four and other things, and maybe hopefully something fun, but probably not. It'll probably be Ted Lasso again, because I only have two modes. It's Star Wars or Ted Lasso, apparently. But all right, guys, take care. I'll talk to you guys next time with something. Bye.
All right. Yeah. Someone's screaming outside my door. What the fuck that is?
Yeah. Ted Lasso season four is coming, apparently. So,
yeah.
I don't know how that's going to work, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. It's a fun show, and I'm not surprised that they wanted to make more eventually. But we'll see how it goes for them. I really just want to hear Jamie Tart dance again. I mean, that's really all I want. But I believe it'll be a good season.
Yeah. I kind of want to see Nate and Roy win the cup or whatever. So
yeah, that would be cool.
Maybe it doesn't even have to have Ted Lasso in it.
I mean, I guess you definitely, I mean, you really don't, right?
I feel like his story is wrapped up. Like, he went back to Kansas and that's that. Yeah. I don't know why you'd drag him back out there.
Yeah, unless they need him to get over the hump, like, you know, inspire people again. I don't
Maybe.
Know. Yeah. So, yeah. Next week, we're doing our film Explosion 1994. So stay tuned for that extravaganza. Zach and Corinne will be on the episode next week, so that'll be fun to listen to. The week after that, we're doing Beetlejuice. And the week after that, you can say hi to us at the Colorado Festival of Horror. I know, Brad, you have some things got going on that weekend. But we will be there, and you should be able to say hi to us. We don't have a booth or anything, but we will be out and about. So, yeah. Until next time, we'll see you at the movie. A real nerd knows who shot a real nerd. Can follow the plot of a real nerd. Look at all the gods. Lights, camera, action. Real nerds. Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. Twitter and Instagram, at Real Nerds. Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bologna for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it.